welcome to the show, man. Officially, it's been
thank you
a long, long time coming. I know you and I have been talking about it for a minute, so I am very happy to have you here. And for those of you who don't know who Brandon Sorensen is, he is currently the VP of West for Forte, which is a collaboration systems integrator.
So currently, I'm the regional VP for Forte of the West. So that's really California and in Arizona as it sits today, right? I oversee all the branches within that region, right? So from sales to operations to delivery, then we roll up to the broader group. Forte is a fantastic company. The ESOP side of it is very intriguing, right? Once you have employee ownership and that runs through the entire company, the psyche, the approach, the mindset of every employee in that company is a bit different than what you typically experience at your standard companies, right? So right now we operate across the US. I believe we got about 45 locations across the US right now. We're also expanding internationally as well as we speak. So a lot of growth going on, a lot of exciting things. We touch all the standard AV practices, you know, broadcast, conference rooms, UC, the whole nine.
For a lot of the young professionals, one of the things that we get a lot of, Brandon, when we're working with, you know, PMs, if we've worked with techs, anybody in service, is they want to get to that next level. For you, how did you get into leadership in your career? Like, how did that transition? Because that's a question that always comes up with us when we're recruiting people. So I want to get into leadership, but it's like, I don't think they understand how to get there.
It's a journey, right? First off, you need to work under a great leader, right? You need to get some experience in how others manage and learn from the leaders that manage well as the ones that don't, right? Take all those learnings and apply them to what you envision yourself as being a leader. But I would say the biggest thing is patience. And I think a lot of, especially folks coming out of college and getting into whatever industry it may be, patience can be hard. I'll never say it's a bad thing to want to progress and grow your career, right? That's that eagerness that you want in any individual that you hire and you bring on board. But I also think there's some patience that needs to come along with that, because you need to go through the experience. You need to go through the reps. You just need the time to marinate and learn. And I think that's where a lot of people have short attention spans.
Would you say from a lot of the young professionals that you mentor or have over the years, that is more or less probably some of the biggest challenges? They just don't have an idea.
I think, you know, you think about it is what is a leader, and a lot of people are they really narrow it down to someone who's making decisions, who really takes ownership of how the business is running. There's a little bit there, but at the end of the day, being a leader is bringing all the heads to the table, bringing that team together, making sure that everyone's got input and that you're hearing all sides of whatever you're trying to solve or wherever you're trying to go in your business, right? Because you run across a lot of leaders, quite honestly, who that's how they work. They just want to make a decision, move on. They don't take that input. And by bringing your broader team into that conversation, by getting that input from step one all the way through the endpoint, not only are you getting all that valuable input, but you're also taking them along for the ride, right? So you're helping them mature on their side to say, this is what it takes to make decisions. This is what it takes to figure out how we solve problems, right? And by bringing them into that fold and bringing them along for that journey, it just sharpens their tool belt and their skills as they move forward in their career, right? So looking at those opportunities as growth and opportunity to learn is what's really valuable at the end of the day.
Lately, I was asked by some of these bigger organizations out there of how do we get talent into the industry, right? And how do we grow this industry? Because, you know, collaboration, as long as I've been in it, in audiovisual, has really grown and become bigger. But one of the biggest challenges is also the talent gap, right? And so what makes a good PM?
That's a loaded question, really, because there's a lot of different aspects to being a PM that make one successful. How am I engaging with the clients? How am I engaging with my team? How am I communicating challenges and risks? And making sure that you're at the forefront of everything. I see a lot of PMs struggle because if a challenge comes up within a job site, a project, what have you, they kind of hide a little bit. They don't communicate, get out in front of it. And that's where things build up and become problematic, right? The truly good PMs look at that as an opportunity to further build the relationship. I will tell you, when I was a PM, my best clients were the ones I had the most challenging projects with. And that's, we went to war together, and I raised the flag right away and said, we have risk here and here and here. This is how I plan to attack it, but I want you to be aware of it, right? And that it is a risk, and that we have to figure out how to overcome this. And that communication, that transparency with the client especially, drives everything and drives their satisfaction even on challenging projects. And then on the flip side of that, that same communication back to your team, so everyone's on the same page, marching to the same beat, right? That's paramount. So being a great PM is really just being that quarterback or that coach.
Some of the challenges I've seen leaders like yourself, not specifically you, but just around the industry and anything pretty much low voltage, is PMs who do not have the financial acumen. How does a PM get to that financial acumen?
You're really a product of your environment at the end of the day, right? So when I was a PM, I didn't have tools. I had to figure it out on my own and figure out how.
You didn't have AI? You didn't have all this other stuff, man?
I was working on an Excel sheet, just trying to keep everything in order, right? Yeah. We didn't have these nice apps, these, you know, different back-end software that kind of help you manage through that stuff. Now, most companies, at least ones that are matured, have some sort of platform that really drives all that. So as long as you're staying on top of what's going on and making sure that that's up to date, the financials become much, much easier. But then, especially with financials, you have to go through the cycle a few times to really understand where your blind spots are. You know, what do I not know? I need to get through this project, look back on it, be retrospective in how I approach that and say, where could I have been better here? What did go well and I want to repeat again?
Where do you see the biggest mistakes that PMs, regardless of seniority or entry level, make when it comes to the financials?
It really varies by PM. Generally speaking, I think the financial side of it and how projects play out, especially when you start to get into hiccups in the project. Scope creep, different things like that. Are you staying on top of your change orders? Are you staying on top of the communication around your change orders so you don't have a pile of change orders stacking up that you're going to hand to the client at the end of the project and they're going to look at it and go, what is this?
Which happens a lot, by the way, which is funny you bring that up.
Oh,
a lot.
It happens far too much. They just kick it down the road and it's like all of a sudden now you have a very challenging conversation with a client that didn't need to happen in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So understanding how that needs to be communicated is actually probably first and foremost what they really need to understand is, by me staying in front of this, I'm going to show well no matter how rough the project may or may not get. The other side of that is, to your point, understanding the amount of effort it takes, what teams you have on site. Some teams are faster than others. Some are better quality. You know, you need to understand your personnel and how long it takes them to accomplish things. And not only that, and probably more importantly, is when an issue does come up within that general deployment, what's my rework for it? What's my triage? And am I looking at that clearly? Because a lot of times someone will say, well, we can fix that room in a day. And all of a sudden you're a week into it and it's still not fixed.
What would you do to advise to make sure that transition is as smooth as possible for the client? Because one thing I've noticed with you over the years, you've been able to consistently build out with these big Fortune 100 companies because of how you executed on the first, second, and third project. And in this space, you only get like one or two shots, and if you burn that bridge, they're not going to work with you again.
The documentation side of it is super important. I see so many companies, and sometimes we do this from time to time too, where we don't have all the closeout docs ready when it's time for handoff, right? When you're ready to hand off and get sign off from a client, are we having the sign off conversation? If the client says yes, we're good to go. Now we're going to transition to day two support. We're going to transition to training. We're going to transition to all your as-built docs. So let's have a step-by-step process that we can walk the client through after that acknowledgement of, yes, we're good here and signed off. That gives them a feeling like they did a great job here and they're looking after me long after this project is done. I'm walking out of this space feeling like our path forward is pretty clean right now and I have all the confidence in the world in this company. When you don't deliver that, questions are there, right? And you don't want questions coming out of any sort of project or an engagement.
How did you learn to be so effective and how were you building out those programs, if you could talk about that, to where you could really execute at a high level? Because again, you've done a very good job at maintaining these relationships.
So I think most companies, and this goes across several industries,
yeah,
you tend to swing for the fences a lot of time, and you sometimes sell things that you're not quite ready to support, right?
Yeah.
The idea of there's kind of a one-stop, like, this is the processes I got to put in place to accomplish this end goal. It's really unique to each situation, and you got to look at where the starting point is and the end point is. And where I found traction with a lot of these, I like to call them hyperscalers, these large Fortune 100 companies, is to really lean into their pain points. Like, what is not working for you today? What is your struggle? And if I can solve those one or two or three items for them,
yeah,
I can back into a lot of really strategic conversations and allow the relationship to mature in a much more beneficial way than it would be if I was just doing a project for them and wiping my hands and moving on.
Once the deal gets sold, would you say that's a lot around the issues that operational leaders will have or organizations trying to build out those programs is they don't get enough, they don't lean into the pain point to say, hey, all right, I hear you, we'll build this out.
I think generally looking, most companies will look at the sales rep as the tip of that spear for building the relationship, going deeper and wider into accounts, right?
Yeah.
I see it as almost more of an operational function, right? It might be a byproduct of the Bay Area because a lot of these companies don't like to be sold to out here. They want you to be a solutions provider.
Couldn't agree with you more, yeah.
So I think it's more of an operational partnership to say, okay, we're doing our first project together. Let's get into the weeds and understand how each other works so we can come out of this successfully and build on something. And all of a sudden you're hit over the head with needs by the client or the GC or something else that you weren't expecting because you never sat down to have the conversation of not how are we going to sell this, but how are we going to operationally deliver this, right?
Is this where sales and operations have to be a lot more aligned when they're having those initial conversations? And I only say that because one thing I've gathered from my side of the fence is it's no different than like marketing sales. There's always at odds. They're not always on the same page. Well, I see that same thing with sales and operations. Was that a big part of that success as well?
That was a key to this. I mean, if I look at all things that led to success, it was that partnership, right? Every morning we were calling each other, syncing up. We were talking about current clients. We were talking about upcoming opportunities. We're talking about what we're struggling with now and how we're going to fix it, right? That communication was daily and frequent. What I learned from that is when I went off to lead sales teams was I will always have somebody from operations in these sales calls.
Why is it that many organizations, from what I see, aren't bringing operations in earlier enough? Is it they don't know? Do they not think that that part is needed?
I would say generally speaking, those organizations just generally have more of a sales mindset.
Okay.
Sales is really just where it needs to be. That's what's going to generate the revenue. And most of their focus goes into that. And operations is seen as sort of a necessity or just a means to an end, right? Also, you have some companies who kind of backed into their business. You know, they weren't necessarily thinking they were going to be a big AV company or a big solutions company. They were maybe pointed in a slightly different direction. So all of a sudden, they got this book of business and their company's growing in this direction and they don't quite know how to handle it. And so they look at operations as coming along for the ride rather than getting out front and leading that.
Man, you know, it's funny. I see, that's where I see a lot of companies, right, where you just described. And so that leads me into my next question is, when you get with your sales leaders, are you guys talking about like, hey, this is going to be the go-to play?
Well, ideally, you start to, like any good team, you don't need to talk. You just start to feel that out, right? And people read and react depending on in the room. When you say, you know, operations comes along for the ride, it should really be, operations should be your revenue driver. At the end of the day, that's what should be driving your revenue, not your sales team. Your sales team's an arm of getting new deals and getting new relationships and building the business up front. But if you don't have that rock solid operational foundation behind it, you're constantly going to be searching for new clients because you're going to have retention problems, right? But if you have robust operations that can add value, now clients actually see, no, the rubber hits the road. When they come to deliver, they truly deliver. And that keeps clients around. That's how you have 5, 10, 15 year clients, is because you're doing it right operationally, not because you have a great seller that's just always out in front of them selling.
You know, right now the big thing is meeting workspaces at scale, right? Huddle spaces. But there's also these very creative projects that take place. How do you as an operations executive and an operator, how do you balance like flexibility and then process? Because I feel like sometimes too much process eliminates that ability to really give that white glove service.
Putting enough process in there to give your team the confidence and the structure to know what to do in most situations, but then also leaving enough ambiguity in there where they can kind of make their own decisions and understand the business that's in front of them and give them some leeway to manage that. I always tell my teams, you know, you're the CEO of your business. I don't care what role you are in the company.
Yeah.
You are the CEO. You know, you may need to go to the board for approval on certain decisions, right? But at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. If you're a PM, if you're a lead tech, whatever it is, you own that workflow, and it's up to you to A, do a quality job, and B, if you don't have the tools to execute at a high level and be quality, to raise that flag and come back to us and say, I need X, Y, Z in order to give, you know, the client what they're looking for, or to accomplish what I'm asking of them or the team's asking of them, right?
You and I have had some good conversations in the past on organizations needing to make investment in certain areas. And one thing I've seen, and I've been guilty of this, is you don't want to lose the opportunity for money, but you may not be ready operationally to execute. So making that investment now, yeah, you may not be capturing all that today, but if you took a step back and laid the foundation, a strong foundation, you could actually take 4 or 5 steps forward. I want to dive into this on this podcast because I do see a lot of organizations, they just kind of keep going. They never fix those areas that they need to fix. Where do you see organizations, you know, if you're advising everybody who's listening right now, what would you tell them? I guess that's the better question based on what you've seen over the years.
You have to be reactive and in the moment and fix things as they come up, right? The more they build up and fester over time, the bigger the issue becomes and the more it dilutes what your end goal is, right? Where we're talking about going in and having a brain trust session that says, what are your pain points? Where are you guys struggling now? What does the roadmap look like? And then operationally, we can put a package around that to solve for their issues. And we can back into those projects over the course of the next 1, 2, 3 years. So while it might hurt right now to not get that $500,000 project that we had it potentially had a chance at, I see millions of dollars of opportunity down the road if we can back in, form that operational foundation with the client, and give them trust that we're not just selling to them, we're actually a partner.
When you were running operations, you know, for the US globally, were there times that you had to, okay, we have to step back, we have to fix this? Because a lot of times people go, oh, you're just saying that, you've never really had to do that. Had you had to like
pump
the brakes? Yeah,
I've had some tough conversations with clients to say, you probably need to bring somebody else in that can help you here, because it's just not in our wheelhouse, or we're not at scale enough to support everything you have going on. We didn't have sales teams. We had account managers that just ran the program, and we were transparent. We spoke to them like an engineering or a consultant arm more than a VAR. And there's several very large clients out here that people would tell me I'm crazy for saying that we can't support you right now, but we did. We went into those, and I still have great relationships with those clients because we were transparent and honest with them. And there's ongoing business down the road by taking that approach, right?
What would be your message to companies out there who are in that scaling phase and starting to move up like you guys did at Thresher and some of the other companies you've been at? What would be some words of advice?
At the end of the day, your team is your core, and the talent that you bring in, the culture you build, that spreads, right? And clients see that. When you have good culture, when you care about your own team as much as you care about the end result, that shines through, not only from a sales perspective, but the boots on the ground. I would have daily conversations at the end of the days with my foreman saying, what, give me the good, the bad, and you know, what conversations you had with our clients, right?
Yeah.
And if you have gaps, especially on the operations side, and how you deliver it in your offerings, and how you're ready to scale that business,
yeah,
it's going to be a rocky road. And to your point earlier, you're going to go after some projects and you're going to win some, but you're going to fall on your face and you may not get that second chance. So be ready for prime time, be ready for that scale. And if you're not today, don't try to overextend yourself, because reputation is all you have at the end of the day. And if you sell beyond your reputation, that will come back to bite you tenfold.
When you have an operations team that's running on all 6-8 cylinders, mm-hmm. would you say that it makes it easier for your sellers of the business to make money, because now they're not having to prospect as much, even though from a sales leadership perspective, I want them to prospect more, but now you have business coming in because you're able to execute and they want to continue to do work with you because, again, it's a partnership.
I don't have to keep selling ourselves over and over again to this client because we keep struggling, and I don't have to keep coming back and trying to fix things, right? My operations teams, my deployment team, they've got it locked down. I have trust in them that they're going to do what we need to do. And if there are issues, we're going to bring them up. We're going to talk about them. We're going to work through them productively with the client. And because I have that trust, now I can focus more time on building my other business outside of that client and expanding, right? I can use my other clients now as referrals. And I don't just refer them to, look at what we sold them. It's like, no, look at how we sold it to them. Look at how we deployed it. And look at how we got there, not just the end result. And use your current clients to sell to future clients.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about.
Well, man, this has been very, very helpful and insightful. I do genuinely appreciate you taking time to have this conversation. Appreciate it, Brandon.
Absolutely.